Welcome to Just the Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in retail, marketing, production, and food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is industry veteran, Sierre James. Sierre is brand director, frozen meals at Conagra. Prior to her current role, she was brand manager for Hunt's, senior brand manager for Ready Whip and Egg Beaters, and associate brand manager of Salty Snacks. Prior to joining Conagra, she was with Procter & Gamble as assistant brand manager for Gillette Global Emerging Markets, male shave and personal care, and assistant brand manager for Febreze. It's safe to say that Sierre's career spanned nearly every aisle of the store at this point. Sierre, welcome to the podcast.
Scott, thank you for having me.
All right. So just as a starter, Sierre, I know your current position, you touch a lot of different products and manage a lot of different disciplines. So tell our listeners a little bit about kind of what a day in the life is like for you these days.
These days, my days really begin with just checking to see what's new. The reality of life and food right now is that the change is ever present and it's really high speed. So I make a point of starting the day and the week with just taking a look at what's happening in the restaurant industry, what new news is happening across the retailer landscape, and what things are trending when I look in digital and social related to food. Food is a passion area for consumers, and it's really important to just stay abreast of what's new and trending, what's on the cusp, and what things are declining in popularity. So I really make a point of just trying to stay on top of things and share that information with my team so that we can use it to stimulate our thinking about the future.
So you're looking for research-based insights. Let's stick with that thought for a moment. What are some of the trends that you're noticing? I think we'll probably touch on digital and just, you know, changing online and in consumer behaviors later, but what sorts of trends are you seeing, in the grocery store aisles? And you mentioned restaurants as well, which is kind of interesting that, you know, you're also turning to that specific industry to, you know, perhaps guide some of the decisions that you make in the position that you lead. So what are maybe, you know, two or three of the trends that seem to be popping up on your radar every morning?
Well, I'll say first and foremost is that consumers are looking for experiences and variety and excitement with the food that they eat. Reality is you always are going to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but increasingly consumers want something that's a bit more provocative. They want us to stimulate them, to really awaken their senses. They don't want just the mundane and the routine. And so it's really important in food, not only to deliver upon the deliciousness, right? The food, of course, has to taste great, but it also has to pique their interest. And so, you know, prior to probably the last 3 or so years, we really had a much more limited view of what our competitive landscape truly was, right? If it was in the frozen aisle or if it was in a grocery aisle, that's really where we stopped. Right? We were looking at our immediate peer set for inspiration and information about what was happening or what would be delighting to consumers. And it's been really exciting to really expand that thinking and to realize that it's not just about your current peer set or your near-end peer set. It's about how consumers are interacting with food in the broadest sense of the word, right? So when we expand that view, we get so much richer information and inspiration. We get to be more provocative. We get to rethink and redefine what we're doing in the frozen set or in the center of store or in the perimeter store, depending on what the brand is. And so that expanded view of the world has really turned on our heads how we think about food delivery in this industry. And so, of course, I'm interested in what's happening in frozen, but really, really much more interested in what's happening in consumers' homes, what's happening when they go to the quick serve or the fast casual or the fine dining restaurants, and finding those themes that can help to inform how I'm thinking about my brand day to day. So it's more of a, and honestly, it just opens up the possibilities for me as a marketer at heart as well as our performance in market as a competitive brand.
So I want to dig in and ask about some of the challenges that you are overcoming. I think I know perhaps one of the challenges. So if I can scratch my curiosity itch for a moment, while I have you here, I could pretty much hit a golf ball, and if I hit it well, hit about five different restaurants right now that I think I would put under the category fast casual, where the customer can go in and customize what they want. Obvious examples include, you know, Chipotle. You have, places where you can basically build your pizza as you go down the line. You have, the various poke restaurants with poke bowls and stuff, and you go down the line and you can choose what you want. So that level of customization, I think, parallels a lot of customization in our world right now. That's what one reason why Netflix is beating down the cable companies, because you get to choose what you want and select according to your needs and whatnot. So my question is, how if that's a trend, and I think it is. So if we establish that as a trend, and I don't think it's going away, how do we in frozen foods deal with that? Because frozen foods, somewhat by definition, and correct me here when I'm wrong, but somewhat by definition, it's not customized, right? It's kind of created for you, and it's quick. It's attached to other brands. It's oftentimes delicious. So how are you maybe overcoming that challenge where people want hyper customization right now? Yet I think that frozen foods, I can't imagine how frozen foods becomes customized, but I'll let you go ahead and tell me what I'm missing.
No, I think you're spot on. That is the conundrum, right? And so customization is certainly ever present in places that are growing when you look at the restaurant landscape. But what customization really boils down to is a choice in experience. Right. And so when you think of it in that manner, from a frozen foods perspective, it is our responsibility or our challenge to deliver a breadth of offerings that meet consumers where they're at in terms of desired experience. Right. So we have to be really choiceful in making sure that we have a balanced line across the company and even across the brands that meet the need or the desire in that particular moment, right? So there are days and spaces where people want something that's spicy and think about these taste test challenges, things that have a little bit of heat to them, right? But then there are days when they want something that's a little bit more on the comfort side of things, a little bit reminiscent of home and when mom was cooking. And then there's this gray area in between, right, where there are nuances that we can change across our food and our meals that help to address a broader landscape of what consumers are looking for in that particular moment, right? So at this point on the brands that I work, you are not able to, within that same meal, put the peppers in or have the peppers out, right? But across the line, we do have an increased focus on making sure that breadth across the line is such that we're giving consumers more choice. And where such a time where it is a fully formed meal, that is the nuance, right? How do you, within a current brand equity, give enough range where consumers can go to you for more than one particular type of flavor or experience? So that's really where we're placing our energy. Aside from that, when you think about frozen, yes, there are fully formed meals where you've got everything in one, but increasingly it's important to also have more disparate offerings. And so help you with the meal and providing the side or the protein or the dessert, right? We can be a part of that holistic experience. And so there are different ways in to help with that customization on what consumers are trying to get in a particular meal or eating occasion. But that challenge looks a bit different whether you're a fully formed meal or whether you're one component of a broader meal that's being assembled.
That's a great point. It is about the experience of customization. Last night I went shopping, and on the shopping list was waffles. And long story short, I came home with three different kinds of waffles to satisfy everyone's need in the house. And isn't that what, you know, those customized restaurants are providing, right? I had to get the chocolate ones. I had to get extra thick ones. And I don't remember. Yes. I think blueberry might've been the other one.
Yes. You are not alone in that. There are five people plus a dog in my household. And when I tell you waffles is a great case study, we've got gluten-free waffles, we've got Mickey Mouse-shaped waffles, and then we have some whole grain extra fluffy waffles, right? And so I think that that is a perfect example within the category of how you deliver that experiential nature and within that same brand, right? These are all from the same brand, but just different ways in depending on what you're in the mood for.
It was very kind of you to get the Mickey Mouse waffles for your dog.
So that's exactly right.
So, you know, there's obviously online shopping is disrupting every industry. And while it was a little bit of a trailer, it's certainly starting to disrupt the grocery industry with people, you know, shopping in having, you know, whether it's Amazon or everything that Safeway and the others are getting involved in. But perhaps the one category that is immune to shopping for groceries while on the couch is frozen meals, which you lead. So is that true? And I assume that thinking about online shopping is still something that you are at the very least monitoring. So to what angles are you monitoring those behaviors and how is it impacting your category?
You know, it has changed the way that people shop in general, just being able to click a button and have it arrive, right? In really nice packaging and pretty quickly. And so when we think about other categories that have transitioned over to this online and ordering space, right, this digital world. Food is certainly a key area that we have to crack as deliverers of food and food experiences. And so frozen is obviously a torture test of sorts because so much of our quality is dependent on how that food is handled, right, from start to finish. And so I will say that we are in active learning mode and trying lots of new ways in which to take advantage of these services. I think it's a continuing journey. We've not fully cracked the nut, but we are committed as an organization to figuring it out. And we're in this space where we're open to trying new things, learning from them, and then pivoting if we find that it's not quite the right approach for our brands or for our company as a whole. But it's not something that you can ignore, right? That's one approach when technology and disruption hits an industry or a behavior. One way is to ignore it. But we're certainly in a different space where we are actively embracing it, knowing that it is going to be and continue to be an increased level of importance to our businesses and the brands that we deliver. So learning mode, trying new things and committed to figuring it out and being open to evolving as technologies and capabilities change. But obviously the elephant in the room that you just cannot ignore.
Sure. Yeah. Jeannie's not going back in the bottle, we know.
Not at all. Not at all. But at the same time, I think it's also important, as much has changed, there is still a lot that remains the same. People still go to the grocery store for the vast majority of their food purchases, especially as it relates to frozen. So we certainly are not going to ignore or deprioritize our traditional partners. We just have to expand our friend set, right? We want to be where consumers are interacting with and purchasing food. Like, that's where we and our brands want to be. So we're looking at it more in terms of making an expanded set of friends versus deprioritizing any of those that have been along for the journey, because I do think that there is a special and unique role that each one of those delivery outlets plays, whether it's a traditional grocery or mass retailer, a club store, a drugstore, a dollar store, or some of these vehicles that are available online. They're all important, and we have to do our diligence in finding out the best way in which to reach consumers where they're at.
And segueing into that, you recently spoke at the Brand Innovators Digital Transformation event. So how is ConAgra changing the way that the various brands communicate with customers? How is that evolving? We've touched on the need to offer variety and consumer choice, but in the last few years, how has ConAgra changed how they communicate and connect and build relationships with their customers? Certainly beyond the retail shelves, but outside of those retail shelves, how are you going about that?
You know, one thing that has unlocked the way in which we approach reaching consumers, you know, from an advertising perspective, is realizing that it is all marketing, right? So sometimes you'll hear the caveat of, oh, digital marketing or shopper marketing or fill in the blank, right? It's all marketing. They are all viable and important ways of sharing information and connecting with consumers. And I think that simple adjustment in how you talk about it really changes how you approach it, right? I think, you know, call it 5 years ago, there was a lot of angst around, okay, well, how do you do this type of marketing differently, right? And all these new channels and new ways of reaching, and a bit of a fear of the unknown, right? As we all get up to speed on how you compete or how you communicate. And in removing some of that caveat and some of that mystery, I think it helps us just to realize that there are appropriate ways in which to use each of those tools in the toolkit, and that it's important not to ignore any of the outlets, right? It used to be that you could make a plan for advertising and kind of set it and forget it. You spent all of these dollars on your TV advertising, right? And once you shot it and aired it, it kind of was done because you spent all your money.
The good old days.
Right. Arguably, right? Now, there are ways in which to create content. We'll loosely call things disposable content, right? So there are lower cost outlay, speedier time frames in which you can develop a message, get it out there, learn from it, adjust it, expand it, or remove it, right? Mm-hmm. That learning cycle has shortened so drastically that it allows you to try a lot more things. It allows you to be more real time in how you pivot and adjust your messaging or your approach. And so that's been the fun thing. And I'll say over the past few years, we've really focused on what is the right mix. You can't argue with the reach that you're going to get from having a national TV spend, right? You can't argue with that reach. That is an important tool, but that is a tool that increasingly we use more choicefully, right? Not every single thing needs to be communicated in that way, or not every single brand needs to be communicated in that way. And so there are still needs for communication and reaching consumers. We have to be very disciplined in which tools we use where and when. And so those are the conversations. It's not about we'll never do this type of advertising again, or we're only going to do this type of advertising. It's more about looking at the entirety of the portfolio, figuring out where we want to place certain bets, and investing accordingly. But finding the right way in which to advance a particular brand's cause or communication needs. So a much more disciplined approach, and at the same time flexible, because we have so many tools at our fingertips, and we're ensuring that we're using them in a more informed manner.
So I'm curious how you... you do do that. I know you've been generous with your time, but you touched on something. So it's the good old days, right? Which we joked about. You you got your consumer insights, you developed a campaign, you launched that campaign across all the the traditional forms of media, print, TV, radio. Obviously, you know, that was pretty much all we had to go to, right? You had PR and stuff, but it was pretty much that. And you ran it, and you ran it all at once, and you'd run it for 4 months, and you knew you reached 12 million people. You could easily quantify that. And then to an extent, you had to sit back and wait for the results, right? You couldn't place an ad in a magazine and get an immediate metric back. You know, you couldn't say, oh, hey, X amount of people thumbed up that ad in Sports Illustrated in 1983. So you would watch sales, and if sales increased, then that would give you your answer, right? So I'm sure that process still applies, but now what you have is, I like to say, you know, digital is the most measurable marketing tool on earth. I mean, you can literally spend $50 online and after 24 hours have a decent idea of how your message is resonating. And you know, through whether it's click-through rates or social interactions and whatnot. So you can, on the one hand, you can, I'm all over the place, but stick with me. I'll come back around here. On the one hand, you can be driven nuts, right? Because you don't get the luxury, if you will, of develop a campaign, have confidence in it, sitting back. You can adjust your campaign daily if you really wanted to. But grocery in particular doesn't have a straight direct line to e-commerce. So for example, if I'm selling women's bathing suits online, which one of my family members does, my brother, he could place an ad and he knows within 48 hours how that ad's doing. So he changes the creative, swaps it up. His sales went up more because he's selling bathing suits online. Yeah. How do you make your decisions knowing that there's a temptation to adjust creative and messaging practically daily? I'm over-exaggerating to make my point. Yet you can put out content that gets high interaction rates. Yet I would imagine that you need to wait for retail sales for any effect to be seen. So how do you manage that, knowing that back in the day you placed 4 months of ads, you waited to see, hey, we did better this quarter. Okay, well, our campaign worked. Let's run more. Or let's even, you know, how are you going about the sea of metrics, the temptation to adjust all the time, but also recognizing you need to wait perhaps months for people to shift trial or to buy more of something.
That's right. It's finding that that balance in the availability of data and where you place your energy, right? No one is benefited by daily phone calls to the agency to say, change this, play this, not that, right? That's just not a good use of our time and resources. And so while the information is there, the approach we take is we check in far more frequently, right? We are not letting 4 months go by before we have discussions around what seems to be working, right? We are certainly in an active plan mindset when it comes to how we keep a pulse on our business, how it's performing, right? The information that we have available, we want to use it, right? It's in our best interest to use it. But you also can't become so mired in and overwhelmed by the current data that you lose focus on the future, right? Because at the same time in my role that I need to be concerned with delivering the day, the week, the month, and the year, I also have to be focused on what's our out-year strategy, what's our plan for the next 2, 3, or 5 years, right? So it definitely is a balance. One thing I'll say is, you know, as we approach consumers and advertising and making connections with consumers, we have increasingly embraced a mindset of casting a broader net. it used to be that you pick one specific consumer who was one particular age, had one particular type of household, and had one particular type of socioeconomic makeup, right? And that was to whom you marketed. In our view now, we understand that there are multiple consumers and multiple ways in which our brand can be used and multiple ways in which we can help. So we're casting a broader net in how we talk about our brands and how we communicate with consumers, right? We're reaching up quite a bit further than we used to, in the expectation that we're reaching more consumers because we're relevant to them, however they're using our product. And so what that means is we're creating much more content in the upfront that has some nuanced differences, right? You might have an ad that talks one particular set of benefits. You might have another ad that talks some slightly different, right? Because we know that there are so many more usages and occasions during which our brands are relevant, and we have been artificially limiting ourselves. So from the get-go, we're starting with a broader array of content that enables us to put multiple things out, learn at the appropriate checkpoints, and check in at the right times, but it doesn't necessitate that you're looking at it every day, because then you're going to go create something new. We're starting with the end in mind. If the end in mind is to reach a broader audience, you create a much more content in the upfront so that you can put it out there, let it be in market for a while, and then at an appropriate time, right? Not every day, but maybe once a month, maybe once every 6 weeks, check in to see how those are performing and make adjustments and pivot, right? So it's not necessarily a linear approach where you make it, you learn, and then you change. It's, hey, let's start a bit wider. Let's open the aperture a bit in the upfront, then go about the process of checking in, learning, and pivoting. But you give yourself the benefit of starting broader than we want to see it. So I think that is helping to have a more balanced approach to when you check in and when you evaluate things, because you know you have a lot of bets that you've placed, and you've got to have confidence that insights were such that something will be doing well, and hope a lot of something. Mm-hmm.
And somehow you have to juggle across so many brands.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yes.
On that note, we'll let you get back to all of those brands that you're overseeing. I think, you know, most people know they can find ConAgra at conagrabrands.com and ConAgra at Facebook as well. Before we sign off, I'll give you a quick moment if you want to plug any of the brands that are under your purview. We can encourage our listeners to check those brands out and apply a little bit what we've learned from you today and see how you're you know, applying in the real world.
Well, I'll take that moment. First off, go buy everything ConAgra, because there's some awesome deliciousness there. But if you have to choose, I suggest you go pick up a Banquet Mega Bowl as well as a Kid Cuisine frozen meal. I think that will make your afternoon or your evening go all that much better.
Awesome. We will. And don't forget the Mickey Mouse pancakes for the dog as well. All right. Well, Sierra, thank you very much for your time. Wish the best in luck juggling all of, all these different brands, disciplines and tactics and evolving as the world evolves as well.
Well, it was a pleasure talking with you, Scott. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, the Chef's Best Production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.